So hi there, I'm here with Doug Voss from Safer Systems in Melbourne. How are you, Doug?
Yeah, good and you, Justin.
Doing good. Do you
Good.
want to give our viewers a quick description of who Safer is?
Thanks. We are a manufacturing business in Melbourne. We distribute nationally and internationally too, to five international companies now, five international countries. We distribute height safety and fall protection equipment and management systems for personnel working on roofs.
And what percentage of your physical product do you manufacture yourself as opposed to buy sell?
I'd say 60% we'd manufacture ourselves, and about 40% we bring in or assemble ourselves and buy and sell. So quite a large percentage of it is manufacture.
In Melbourne?
In Melbourne, yes.
With high labor costs?
True.
What's the justification for that? How do you compete with Chinese imports?
Because of the nature of the product and its use is really to save someone's life. That is our mission. We save lives.
Mm.
It's anchorage points, something that someone connects onto to rely on to do the work up on top of a high-level platform or roof. Dangerous position. So we do want to make sure we control that manufacture process very specifically.
Yeah.
And also because of the nature of the product, some of it is fairly big and bulky and platforms, it doesn't justify to get it manufactured overseas. We've got to manufacture in-house and ship it locally.
Excellent. So we worked together for quite a while. How many years?
I think it's just been over three, hasn't it?
I would say at a guess, 3 to 4 years, somewhere between 3 and 4 years.
Yes.
So let's start. I'll put the pressure on you to let our viewers know how you've benefited, assuming you have, from working with Ballistics. What's the upside? Before we talk about the journey, I think it's good if people know where we're going to end up.
The positives. Well, I suppose immediately I'm less worried about what our whole system is and how it works. So we really got a lot more better control on our systems in the way of our custom service teams, our scalability of sales systems in the company. I feel we've got a much better grip on how we're handling it and where we're going in the future. We were very worried to start off with it. We didn't have a scalable model. We didn't have a proper CRM system that we could manage. The whole customer service experience was not good enough for our customers, and that's really where we wanted to engage with yourselves to bring it in, help us to tweak the whole system, the whole program that we're running, make sure we've got a proper process and a workflow and a system that really can cope with the high velocity of calls and customer service requirements that come through every day.
Excellent. So whenever we talk to clients, they always say, which I'm really happy about, they always say, well, our systems are so much better. We have much better visibility and so on. But the question that I get from prospective clients, sometimes even existing clients, is, well, are they making any money?
True. That's good. Very good question. And I like the way you've actually prompted us through the whole process on that actual question. So it's all good to have these systems in place, but what has it actually done to your bottom line? Are you still making that extra bit of money, or are you just seeing better systems now and more comfortable but not making that money? But to be assured that, yes, we are making money, and it has helped us very much to make sure that we're making that money. The whole system has really given us a very clear view of everything that's going on within the teams, so very clear visibility. It's driven accountability too, because everyone is all on the same level. And the best thing I know, from here on, we can scale it up. We can add in extra people in whichever department we need, and we know exactly how to fit them in and to work the system.
Yeah. So I'm not going to put pressure on you to share revenues. It's fair to say you're under $1 billion.
Sure.
But I think it's also fair to say that we've never actually talked about actual numbers, but it appears pretty clear to me that you guys have been growing pretty steadily, probably month on month, definitely year on year, for the whole time we've been working together.
We have been steadily growing. We went through a very sharp growth patch going back 5 years ago, which really tested us and put us under a lot of pressure. We're still continuing to grow, fortunately, we're very, very thankful for that. But of course, now we've got better systems to manage that growth as well. And we were a lot more proactive in our growth. Before, we were very reactive.
So one interesting thing is that we haven't done a huge, if you look at all of the effort that we've expended, all the initiatives we've worked upon, growing sales hasn't actually been a major focus.
No.
It's been coping with the...
Yeah, it's been more managing the sales that are coming there. Our major growth potential really lies in our products, the innovation of our products. Mm. And we do a lot of effort into the NPD side of things, which, again, you helped us on a whole system of that as well. But the growth side has been more managing what's come, and it is to our detriment that we haven't been as proactive as we should have been in the past, but now we've got a much better system. Growth is steady, more in control, and we've got a way of moving forward, a very proactive way of moving forward.
So the interesting thing is, even though I think, you know, us working together has helped to grow sales, I don't think it's fair to say that all of our effort has been growing sales. I think a lot of our focus, probably most of our work, has been building a machine that will scale. Because if I think about the initiatives we've worked on, it's been new product development, it's been engineering, it's been technology, it's been, well, you tell me, what are some of the areas where we've worked over the 3 or 4 years?
Well, probably one of the most exciting areas for us is the development of the technology. We put you under a bit of pressure too there, I think, in requesting the actual type of technology we wanted, the CRMs, et cetera. But as you say, our focus wasn't entirely on sales. It was more managing the teams within the company and the technology to drive that visibility. And while we wanted you to come up with what we thought you had all the answers, we very soon found that we quite specialized and we have very unique requirements. And we put a lot of pressure back on you just to deliver those requirements, which you delivered well. Whole point of the sales process very much being related to a specification type business rather than just the outbound campaigns and sales.
Yeah. So let's go back to the beginning. What prompted you to engage with us in the first place?
I first heard of you from a number of other companies, and then I followed you for a while on a couple of webinars, your website, your book that you're launching, read through that. The whole principle of SPE made total sense to us in our business. We just wanted the pressure put on us to get it put in place, because we had a lot of pressure in the business. We needed extra pressure from outside to help drive this whole system forward. So we needed a more efficient sales function. We didn't have a sales function that was easy and cost-effective and easy to manage. Mm. And what you were advertising in your webinars really ticked those boxes. The sales function, the tools to do it, the improvement in the whole customer service experience, that's what you were saying we could drive, and that's really what we're looking for. And being involved with you, having those first few meetings with you, the key questions you asked really struck home, and that's what helped us to feel comfortable with the way that you said, look, you will be able to help us. And that really proved itself in the solution design workshop that we had.
Yeah, so we spoke once or twice on the telephone, then we came and ran a solution design workshop. And yes, we mapped out a model. I'm just looking at the model there. We've got customer service, inside sales. Interestingly, in this model, there are very few people in the field. Was that a change from where you were or had been previously?
It was a slight change, not dramatically. We didn't have too many in the field previously. Hmm. But what it did help us to do is to reduce those on the field and really concentrate the efforts for those field trips, for those field visits. And we had spasmodic field visits between a number of us, and a number of us would look at different areas or different sectors or different customers and go and do the field visits. And that became a lot of extra work coming back into the office. So you helped us to stream that whole process.
Yeah. So what we really wanted to do was to build an inside sales team to pursue. Most of your work is project work. I think that's fair to say. And yours is a specification environment. So you're chasing specifications to get specified and then chasing those specs through the project workflow. Now, when we first met you, I remember you were managing projects in
don't say it.
Go on, you say it. What were you managing them in?
Well, it was really a spreadsheet database, wasn't it? A Smartsheet.
In Smartsheets, and
which is good in its application, but not good for the system we needed.
Well, every project had its own row, and if we looked along the row, we could see the details of the project, and then we could see the details of the architect, and we could see the details of the installer, and so on. But the architect and the installer, those details had to be replicated every time they were associated with a project, so there was massive redundancy.
Exactly.
But it was working okay. I think you were starting to run into the limits of Smartsheets.
It is. We pushed it to the boundaries. It was teetering and freezing and crashing. And so we knew we couldn't continue on that.
Yeah. So we said, look, this has to go somewhere else. It can't stay in Smartsheets. We moved it into CRM. But the challenge was, and this is a challenge for, I guess, all specification environments, is that the traditional architecture of a CRM isn't ideal for project environments, because the traditional architecture assumes a one-to-many relationship between the account or the organization and the project. Do you want to talk about why that doesn't work in a specification environment?
Yeah, well, as you said, the Smartsheet, we really had every line, a project on every line duplicating that information. It became a massive, as you say, duplicating the same criteria over and over again. But in our environment, what we couldn't have is just a standard opportunities linked to a customer, because we actually engage with the architect right in the beginning. We do the plans, we do a design for them. Then once the project moves on, we engage with other people like engineers or property managers, and then into tendering builders. And then out of three or four or five tendering builders, there's then a nominated builder. And then from there on, it actually becomes handed over to an installer, and then the installers can quote, and they can quote at a tendering stage or construction stage, and there can be four or five installers quoting on the same project. So, as you said, there's one opportunity there with multiple relationships to multiple different organizations.
It's a whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
And conceivably, I guess the one stakeholder could be an architect on one project and a builder on another project and a project manager on another one.
Mostly they specialize in their field, but yeah, that could happen.
Hmm. So it's a challenge, because not only do we have this little ecosystem, and not only do we have to associate a project with multiple stakeholders, but each of the stakeholders has their own relationship with the project that has to be tracked independent of the stakeholder and the project. So for example, an installer might bid on a project, and their bid might be rejected. But then on another project, they might bid, and they might end up being the winning bidder. And you want to be able to see, when you look at a project, oh, well, here were the five bidders, and here was the winning bidder. So you actually have to capture information that doesn't live in the project and doesn't live in the stakeholder, but it lives in the gap between the stakeholder and the project. So the relationship between a stakeholder and a project needs to be its own entity with its own metadata.
Yes, yeah. And we found that out in time, because the way we're trying to link organizations with projects, and then you see the whole relationship, as you said, it's an ecosystem, and you watch that whole ecosystem move through all the stages, and what you've come up with there in managing stakeholders, a stakeholders module, by linking organizations to a project through a stakeholders module, really works well.
And it's fast. I mean, I think we had a sense of the problem immediately. It's fairly easy to understand the problem. I mean, the reality is you have a many-to-many relationship between organizations and stakeholders. But what's fascinating actually is to go into the safer CRM and navigate around, because it's amazing to click on an architect and see the list of projects they've bid on, and then click on one of those projects and for that project see the list of general contractors and subcontractors, and then click on one of them, and you don't have to click many times before you realize these same characters appear and reappear as you navigate around that project ecosystem.
Exactly.
So the complexity of it is kind of fascinating.
Well, it's exactly right, because what we tried many times prior to that to look at CRM systems and build a system for us, and without spending a whole heap of money on a system that could be totally customized to suit us, that's really the only other option we had. We've tried three other CRM systems prior to that, which didn't work.
Yeah.
And this was then an offer of yours, along with the whole consultancy service that you offered. It was really the CRM. And
yeah, we kind of threw it in. How about we build you some cool technology? So we introduced VTiger to the team, and they weren't overjoyed in the first instance to give up Smartsheets in favor of a big piece of new technology.
No, I think they really liked the coloring and all the conditional formatting and that we could put into Smartsheet. Very soon found that it's not all about colors. You have to have a functional system.
Yes, that's right. They could color code every cell, but so it was probably ideal from the individual contributor's perspective, but if you want to share work across a team, it's not ideal. So how long did it take before they realized the power of having all this in a relational database rather than having it in a flat table?
Not too long, Justin, really. I think it was 3 to 4 months when we were in the system and we realized how much more robust it was and how much more functional it was. And it was totally scalable again. We weren't having the problems that we were having before of crashing or too much data, waiting for it to load or save or something like that. It was a proper system that was in place. And although the navigation was totally different, because we used to be able to see everything on a flat table view or row view, here there's maybe one or two clicks to see the different information. It then gave us all the additional features of, okay, let's drill into that architect. Let's see what other jobs that architect's on. Mm. Let's look at all those projects. Right, what stages are all those projects at? Who else is bidding on them? Where are the tenders up to? It gave us so much more better flow around the whole system.
It's fair to say the team wouldn't want to go back.
Definitely.
Now, the interesting thing is that if we look at Safer, the team isn't just using CRM for sales, they're really using CRM for a decent chunk of the business. Which departments work in it now?
It's what we call the project sales. So it's all the specification sales side. Anyone that's involved in a project, right from planning stage through tender stage into construction stage. And we've got a whole team that manage that.
Mm-hmm. And other sales in addition to project sales.
Yeah, definitely. Then on top of that, we've got our what we call our product sales, which really relate directly to our installers or our ongoing account customers. And they don't run totally in VTiger. They run more on our accounting package, which has got all the letters, all the information, the invoices, etc. The two are not joined, but they work in tandem with each other. And as soon as the project ends the end stage of the project's flow, it's then handed over to the sales team to then do the final negotiations with the actual installers to pull the order in and make sure they manage the whole flow of order, supply, delivery, etc.
Okay. So the reason we talked about technology, because I guess it was really the first cab off the rank. We said, gosh, we got to do something with this. You know, Smartsheets is going to fall over if we don't move all this data somewhere else. What did we do next? Was customer service the next cab off the rank?
Yes, customer service is where we focused after we'd got the project team up and running. Customer service really was, again, very reactive, and we just had no way of managing everything that is coming in there. It tend to get lumped onto certain individuals that were quicker to respond or more willing to grab some of the tough jobs. People on the phone we're often struggling to find someone to take a difficult call. We struggled to manage workloads within the team. There was a lot of high demand requests coming in. So that customer service teams and product sales team, really the same team there, was our next whole focus. And that was where you helped us to separate between the technical, non-technical, long lead time, short lead time, and manage the whole flow and velocity of work through that team to give us a much better result and a much better customer service experience.
So we introduced at some point the notion of on-time case completion.
Yes.
Has that taken hold?
Yeah, definitely. I was looking at it just yesterday. We were sitting just over 92%.
That's amazing. Which
was very good. We're quite pleased with that. Fortunately, we had quite a reasonable day yesterday. It wasn't too mad.
Yeah.
But the way that we can...
What was it in the beginning?
We don't know.
But not 92%.
No, not 92%. But when we started integrating it, then we started seeing it started off around about 60% and slowly crept up into the 70s. Our first initial goal was 80%, and now we sit between 85 and 90% on-time case completion. And it's ideal because we've got the board up there right in the sales department. It shows us exactly how it's where we are right at the moment.
You're using the new on-time case completion widget?
Yes. Yeah, we are. So we use it in both projects and the customer service department.
So you were actually the first client to see the insightful dashboard. We used you as guinea pigs and put it in your organization actually as we were building it.
Yes.
How do you benefit, assuming you do benefit, from having that up on the wall and having the numbers in front of everyone?
Definitely we benefit from it. It gives the whole team just better visibility on how they're tracking as a team together. So you may have the short lead time people that can continually do the closed cases on time because everything's short and quick, whereas the long lead time people tend to drag the team down because they've got bigger and harder tasks to try and finish on time. And if they run over time, well, obviously your percentage is going to come down. So that's really where we need to put our focus and see that. So by putting the whole display up there, you get a bit of banter on making sure that everyone's relying on everyone else to finish their cases on time. And you can see straight away that, yes, we're tracking okay today. Everything's going okay. When the pressure starts coming on and the on-time case completion starts coming down, we know we need to get a bit of extra resource or have a quick discussion or WIP meeting to try and focus on, pinpoint on what are the issues that are holding us up, what do we need to jump into to sort out and help the team with to make sure everything's works.
Interesting. So the team members are actually aware of it. They haven't become blind to it.
No, definitely they're aware of it. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I had a conversation with somebody who's actually a customer of yours. I guess they're a supplier/installer. And I mentioned, I said, oh, we work with a manufacturer in your space. Have you heard of a company called Safer? They said, well, we've heard of Safer. They're our primary supplier. And they said, look, those guys are the Rolls-Royce was the word, they said those guys are absolutely the state of the art in our industry. He said, if you've worked with them, we would love to work with you. So that was a nice confirmation. And he said, there other people set their watches or something along the lines of, other companies can set their watches by Safer, which was a...
Yeah, thank you very much, Justin. I think I know the company you're talking about because I had an actual engagement with them myself. They wanted to ask us exactly what we put in place and how we worked about it. And I discussed the whole system and they had mentioned they'd been in touch with yourselves as well. And we had a bit of a chat together, which was really interesting. And they said very similarly, they said how they've seen us progress through the number of years and our service to them and delivery of everything we were able to produce really has been incredible, the way we've been able to turn around projects, tasks, designs, requests for information, any information back to them in time and in full. So it's really has been a long journey for us to make sure we can deliver that. But that's really our goal, is to make sure we are delivering the service we need to our customers to make sure we can supply them with everything that they require, not only product-wise, but that backup on all the technical information, which is very big in our industry.
Yeah. So before we talk about sales, over the course of the relationship, there's been, I don't want to say friction, but there's been sort of healthy tension between us on a couple of occasions because we and I guess, have been pushing you and Anton to go faster. You know, hey, we need to add some heads in here. Are you comfortable to touch on the source of that tension and the nature of that conflict?
I'm always in for a robust discussion, especially with you, Justin. I like the way you do challenge the way we approach things, and we appreciate that too.
Yeah. So, what have been the sort of the two forces around that? There's a case for and a case against. You know, what's been the dynamic there in the background?
I suppose that the reason that we wanted to put extra staff in was really very clear that the poor guys are being almost burnt out. There's so much coming through. There's so much work that they were working with.
Well, they were on fire.
We were all on fire. That's how we thrive, you know. Yeah. But yes, they were on fire. We had a couple of staff members that are really struggling under the pressure, and it was obvious we needed extra staff members in there. The again side of things, I suppose, I like to blame it on someone else, but we always had our accountant on the other shoulder saying, hang on, we're up to our max in staff, and for the amount of turnover, we can't add any more staff. We've got to get better efficiencies from our systems. So we were looking for better efficiencies in our systems, the way we actually set up the whole customer service division, hoping that we'd be able to get sufficient sufficient improvement in that area without having to put on additional staff. We did get the improvement, but we have put on a couple of extra staff anyway over the time.
Yeah, and I guess the core problem is you are growing, and growth is really expensive.
Exactly, it is.
And I guess a lot of accountants don't appreciate how expensive growth is, because I guess cost accounting gives accountants this bias towards assuming a state of homeostasis.
Yes.
They say let's assume everything about the business is constant. We have a balanced line and let's come up with a set of ratios and reason from there. But you guys have been growing at quite a clip, so it must have thrown their ratios out of whack, especially when we were saying to you, look, you know, adding one person is not going to cut it. Let's add four or five.
Yes. Well, I still beg to differ there, because we haven't added four or five.
No, I know.
Although we are still adding another one. Mm. Shortly we'll be adding another one. But, I agree what you mean from an accountant's point of view. The other thing was we could see that the team, in our team, we really require personnel with a lot of technical knowledge.
Yeah.
And to find that person is not just straightforward. You can't just pull out anyone from the industry and put them into our customer service department, because the product is very technical and it's got a lot of Australian standards that everything's got to comply to. So they've got to be very au fait with all that information. And we were a bit struggling, I suppose, to say, how are we going to find this person and just put them in there and get them up and running? Generally, you've found from the people we have put in, it's taken them a full 6 to 12 months to really get up to speed before they can feel like they're really part of the team and know what's going on. Mm. So it hasn't been easy.
So sales, talk to us. There's been a lot of interesting and good, we could talk all day about just the operation side of things, but what have you done over the period to grow sales?
Sales, we liked your idea first of launching the campaigns and pushing those in as opportunities, following them up. Mm. Interesting thing we found was by putting that, obviously we had to have a special offer. A special offer often had to be a unique product or special price. And in the industry we had, by offering that unique or special price, often the customers wanted that price to stay on. We had to negotiate with them to try and get back out of it. So we actually withdrew out of that model slightly And we rather run campaigns as technical data and backup, because that's what our installers are looking for. It's a very difficult industry out there, and they're looking for backup and support and how they can increase their knowledge and speed and time, or decrease their time on site, but increase their speed on installations and have more technical knowledge. So that's really where we pushed our campaigns. And our whole campaign, our whole approach to sales has really been supporting the installer, supporting the customer. And that's really where we, I must say, and where we feel we're strong in the industry, is just that additional level of support and service to the customer, and making sure that we can give them everything, a one-stop shop for everything they need.
Yeah.
And that's really what's driven our sales, is that negotiation relationship that we've held with our customers to make sure they can get exactly the product they need, delivered on site when they need it, packaged in the way they want it, and of course the product works.
Yeah,
no doubt. They've got everything behind them, all the technical backup, the warranties, the guarantees, whatever they need, it's all there.
Mm.
And that's really what we've seen as been our major influence on sales.
So that's on the installer side. You also have a project sales process.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Okay, so while we're engaging with account customers or installers on one side, the other side, we've got the whole projects team that's working on the specification of our products onto projects through architects and specifiers. Mm. So that whole team is working in the background, and that, again, is another way of promoting our products. We've seen a lot of our products sales has been directly related to the number of specifications that we've put out there on plans and buildings.
Yeah.
So every plan gets in front of a builder or architect or installer, and they see our product specified through there. Along with that, there's all the documentation. That's been a massive boost and a help on our sales.
So so like most people in the specification industry, you're subscribing to the data feeds from, I guess, Reeds or Cordell's or
yes,
one of those sources. And those get fed in, and you don't wait for an installer to bring a project to you. You're out there chasing specs.
Yes, we are. We do manage our initial opportunities through Cordell's proactively, but we're very focused on really the type of products we want, the type of projects we want there. A lot of our projects coming into the whole project sales system is reactive and repeat from the architects and specifiers and builders that we engage with, because they've known us we've become their trusted advisor in the way of designing a system that they know will comply and will stand up to the test as it goes through. So there's a lot out there that just want a cheap price and a very simple design to get them over the standards, but we prefer to partner with the people that are serious about safety and want to make sure that we're in it for long term, and they'll repeatedly send us all their projects to design, specify, and work through the whole project system right till completion.
And if you don't get specified, do you still pursue the project?
We do. There's certain projects that come in that have already been designed, not as specified, but we still take that and we use the project to make sure we come up with a scope of works and pass it on to our installers and feed them with additional projects.
So you'll actually invite the installers to bid on the or to get involved in the projects.
Yeah, definitely.
So we out there helping them with the projects they have, but you're also taking them projects.
Yes, yeah, we're feeding them a number of leads, especially to our elite installers that we know take the whole range of our products. They've got a good relationship with us. Of course, we prefer to work for the ones that actually pay on time, and we feed them as much projects as we can.
Yeah, terrific. So you've got the push and pull.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So how many projects, if we were to go and count up all of the projects that are on your radar that you guys are actively managing, actively interested in, at any one point in time, do you have a sense of how many open projects there would be?
Yeah, there's just over 1,000 open projects.
That's incredible.
Which range right from the planning stage all the way through to construction stage.
Yeah, so there's actually 1,000 opportunities that you guys are actively managing at any one point in time.
Yes. Yeah. What we actually intend to do.
Some of them go to sleep for a while, I guess, between specification and build.
They do. Yeah, they do. And we've got to watch out for those, make sure we can pick them up as soon as the project then moves on into
the
next.
So let's say we ignored the ones, let's say we ignored the specification ones and just counted the ones that were, I guess, at the beginning of the build phase. How many of them do you think there'd be concurrently?
I'd have to check up, actually. I haven't looked at this data for a little while there, Justin. I'd say probably 60% of our projects actually sit in the between or construction stage.
Yeah, I would have guessed the same. So about 600.
Yes.
And in a tradition, you've had traditional salespeople before.
Yes.
How many sales opportunities would you think would it be reasonable for a traditional salesperson to manage concurrently?
It's been a while since we've done it. I know we were tripping over ourselves back then, and I couldn't think of the actual, I'd say maximum 100, maximum.
Yeah, I would say an inside sales, so the chaps over at Criterion, so Aluminum, you know them.
Yes.
I think it's fair to say one of their salespeople would have over 100 opportunities open, but he's an inside salesperson concurrently, and be comfortable with that. He's an inside salesperson with no distractions, no involvement in customer service. A typical salesperson would have an involvement in customer service and engineering, and they'd be doing some prospecting. I would expect a typical salesperson, if you went and looked at your competitors, if they were field-based, if they were back and forth between the office and the field, they would probably have 15 to 30 opportunities open.
Yes, yeah.
So if you had a traditional sales environment and you wanted to have 600 opportunities open concurrently, that's a lot of salespeople.
Definitely. Either that or a very confused sales process.
Yeah. Now, if you took 600 and divided it by, let's say, 30, you don't have anywhere near that number of salespeople.
No, we don't. We have two. two full-time, which they are full up, and then we have a number of specialists in the different areas. So the two inside salespeople are really just monitoring the projects, making sure they're passing them through the different stages and making sure they're selling them, especially up into that last stage in construction, where they're negotiating with the builder, teeing up the right installer, making sure that the builder's got the installer's pricing, making sure he's comfortable with what he's got. So they manage that. But the project obviously goes through specific stages of the design department, the again, like a solutions design workshop that they do. They actually specify the they come up with their design criteria, what they actually want to design on there, and we come up with a specific scope of works for them for all their buildings, and then we work towards that through. So ideally we've got two. They are stretched.
Well, and there's more than two because there's an engineering team behind them, but still you compare what you have now to the traditional method for building sales environments, the economies, the efficiencies you guys have there are mind-numbing.
Yes, they are. And unfortunately, we have probably become quite used to those efficiencies. And it's good to be reminded of the efficiencies we do have.
Yeah. Well, this has been a really interesting chat. It's really been an adventure for all of us working with you guys. It's been a huge amount of fun. We've done an enormous amount of stuff, more than we've had time or could possibly have time to touch on. There's been so many interesting initiatives.
Definitely.
It's great to see you guys, kicking goals.
Well, we've really enjoyed the whole journey with you too, Justin. Especially your team behind you as well, the way you manage everything that you have put in place. I've really enjoyed working with your consultants and their push on us as well. Mm. It's been good because you need that extra bit of push to make sure you reach through to where you need to get to. Now, obviously, I hope that we'll get there quicker than we actually did. But realistically, if you look at what we've done, it's been a massive amount of work and a massive change, a massive mind shift change within our company. And we are on a very good foot now to move forward and continue this whole concept, but be able to scale it up as we need to.
Excellent. It's a great story. Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you. No, thank you very much, Justin. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. All the best.